You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 297. This week, we talk about Thor, number 160. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
Speaking of heat waves, so we went to Phoenix last weekend.
I saw. Oh my god.
Yeah, the best part of it though was when we were leaving, the guy who took our rental car was like, "So you come in regularly? You just come to stay for a little bit?" And I was like, getting the seat out, so I was like, "Fine, I'll talk to you." I'd sent my wife and daughter in to like get into the AC. and we were like, "No, this is our first time out here. You know, we haven't been out here before." He's like, "Well, how'd you do with the heat?" And I said, "You know, back home, you know, there's a heat wave right now and everybody's complaining." He says, "Where's home?" "San Jose, you know, California." He says, "Oh, a heat wave, huh? What was it?" You know, it's like, you know, everybody's posting on Facebook. It's like 90, 95. Literally, his immediate reaction was just straight up laughter.
That is totally just fair.
Just like bellowing laughter. And then he didn't say anything. He just like kind of walked away laughing. And then he walked over to a coworker and told her, and she just started laughing.
I feel like that is a completely appropriate reaction in that situation.
It was great. I just love that it was like just the chain reaction of people laughing at a 90. Because the entire weekend we were there, the coldest it got was like 83 on Saturday morning at like 3 a.m.
Oh, damn. That's...
like, that was the low.
At least there's air conditioning everywhere, but then you have to be outside to go between places.
The biggest problem is the car. Because there's like not covered parking because it's the fucking desert. And they have tons and tons of space, so they just build massive parking lots. There's no parking structures, which is what you'd think they would do. So then your car, like, we had Bella threw up one day there because the car seat was hot and she was hot and she wasn't used to drinking that much water, and like she just overheated and threw up from dehydration. Because the car seat was hot, the car was hot, and there was one time I was trying to put her into the car. And at home, like, if she kind of feels like she's getting tipped over a little bit, she'll put her hand on, like, the top of the door frame, and she, like, burned her hand a little bit.
Oh, poor baby.
Because it was, like, 110 degrees, and the car had been sitting out in the fucking parking lot. So it's like, you can't, like, touch anything. You have to, like, throw a blanket over the car seat when you go in somewhere for even, like, 5 minutes. And I'm like, why the fuck do so many people live here? Like, I can understand, sure, it's the desert, but it's the middle of a train route, and it's been a city for a long time, and it's the capital of the state. Like, sure, it can be a big city, but why is it, like, the fifth most populous city in the fucking country?
Well, this is, like, they've been having hotter and hotter heat waves every year, right?
Yeah.
I've heard that. Yeah, so I'm wondering if it was, like, more tolerable.
Maybe? I don't know.
Okay.
Why do 1.6 million people live there? Fucking shit. I just don't understand. Houston either. Houston has balls too. Well, Houston's on a river by the Gulf.
Well, Houston's humid, so it's like worse, I would argue.
Yeah.
I don't know. Grant and I are trying to figure out whether to buy a house in the... It's like bullshit. And we even want to stay here because the traffic's getting crazy. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think I want my family to be in the Bay Area long term. But I don't want to go too far away, because, like, I like being near things. I don't know.
I want to, like...
And everywhere else in the country is racist and terrible.
Yeah, my compulsion right now is to just not live anywhere, buy, like, one of those, like, Sprinter vans, outfit it really nice, and go on, like, a year-long road trip across America.
Dude, my wife and I have been watching Hawaii Five-0, and there was an episode where there were, like, a bunch of people just living in an RV on, like, an empty beach on, like, the eastern shore. And I was that looks pretty good. The RV probably cost them, what, you know, 50 grand? That's cool. Live on the beach when you need something, like, from Costco, just drive into town. It's there.
Hey, you know, Grant's parents live in Hawaii, and if you don't live in the touristy places and live like kind of a little up the mountain, like maybe 20 minutes from the beach instead of 5, you could get really cheap housing.
Yeah, it's not like the interior of the island isn't fucking beautiful too.
Yeah, exactly.
Income.
Andy, if you go in on the castle in Spain, let me know. I might just join you.
No, I just like the move to our little town and we'll pay you, you know, $500 a month to move here. And I'm like, well, you can just make it free. I don't want you guys to like hate me for taking your money to move here. You know, I'm not going to be a dick about it. Come on. It's, you know, I'll go there for free if you give me a house.
Yeah. You could run a B&B.
Yeah. Yes. Like for $100 a month, I'm sure I could book like a night or two of Airbnb.
I mean, if I could get a visa, I could do it because I obviously am not tied to a location for my job. And on $100 a month, if I like saved, I could stretch that for a long time, even if I got laid off.
Yeah. Like it, yeah. If I quit my job and cashed all of my sick and vacation time, I could live there for $100 a month for a couple years. It'd be great.
You'd probably need to become some sort of farmer.
Yeah, I think the stipulation too is that you have to have some generation of income planned. What I really want though is the Italian tourist one that's giving away a bunch of castles. They'll let you live there for free for 2 years if you have a plan on how to bring in tourism to the castle.
Oh, you know, Mitali is a really good cook. You guys could open a restaurant.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like my wife's family is like a ton of good cooks and business people. My wife, like her job day to day is literally like the operations of a facility, like making sure you have chairs, making sure the lights are on, making sure the plumbing works. Like that's her day to day job. So we can definitely run a place. And by the way, my job isn't fucking marketing. I'm pretty sure I can bring in some goddamn tourists. Like
you should open like Indian Italian fusion cuisine. Like you know, up in the Alps or something.
You know, that's actually easier than you think. We've done. Hey, there you are.
Hello.
Hi.
We've made some of that kind of stuff. So what you do is you just make like the gravy for like tikka masala, and you add pasta to that. But instead of just like making the tikka masala gravy like a pasta sauce, then you throw that on like a griddle, and that way the spices and stuff from the curry like burn on to the pasta and it's really like kind of like nice crispy gooey way. It's really good.
That sounds really tasty.
Yeah.
The only fear is that like the purists will come with like pitchforks and tell you that is not how you make Italian cuisine.
Yeah, which is like if it's a small castle in like a regional area.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You guys want to do this?
Let's do it to it.
All right.
This week's comic.
This week we read Thor, number 160 and 161. This isn't Thor from whatever. This is Thor from like 1970-something by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. This is collected in Essential Thor Volume 3. And this is the beginning of our Ego series because Guardians of the Galaxy was a good movie and we want to read some Ego. And this is, like, one of the oldest decent Ego stories I could find. And I was like, Ego versus Galactus. I am down to read that. Why not? And I appreciate it.
Is this his first appearance?
I don't know if it's his first appearance. Let me see. Ego first appearance. I don't know if it is. I just remember it was, like, one of the early ones. Thor 132. So this is not his first appearance. But he did originate in this title.
Okay.
So Thor has been here before. But if I remember that original, the originating story of him is not particularly exciting. But this is fucking Galactus. So I'm down for this. I really appreciated the, like, quirkiness of this thing after reading a lot of serious shit for the last couple months. Like, this is just fun. Okay.
Yeah, this was definitely quirky.
It is kind of like the epitome of 60s and 70s comics.
Yes.
It really, like, if you want to know what those are like, you just need to read this, and it completely embodies the whole vibe of them, which I like. I mean, It's not something I'd sit down and read day to day, but a couple issues now and then, it's a nice mix-up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny. It was just two issues, right? But man, it was so dramatic.
Yes.
You know? Even though, like, I feel like not that much happened, there was a great deal of, you know, emotion behind it.
Yeah, man, the whole weight of the universe.
And a lot happened.
Yeah, these are so much more dense than modern comics.
A short amount of time.
What I appreciate about these the most, I haven't actually read a whole lot of Stan Lee or Jack Kirby. Most of my old stuff that I've read is like Will Eisner and the Spirit. But what I like about this is it's quirky and fun, and there's dumb stuff in here that doesn't make any fucking sense. Like Galactus having a little cube pod that he flies out in. Like, in my modern concept, that's just like, what? And he has, like, a gun that he fires? Okay. Like, that stuff is quirky and weird, but there's, like, so many kernels of great ideas here, too. Like, Galactus just hungers, and he eats. And, like, like Stanley brings up in here, like, a couple, like, can you blame him? Is he really evil? He just hungers. Like, do you blame any other animal or any other being for eating what it needs to eat and try to survive? Can you blame, like, like, that concept of Galactus from 40 years ago now is still our concept of Galactus today. And I mean, it's changed a bit, but the idea of, yeah, he destroys planets, but it's not like he's a bad guy. He just does what he gotta do.
So I know, Andy, you didn't read the bonus episodes. You didn't get a chance. David, did you?
No, I did not read them.
Okay. I did, and there, I don't think you're missing out on much, but my favorite part about them is that basically the idea is that Galactus and Ego kind of have this fight, right? And then afterwards, Galactus is still out there. So Thor's like, okay, I got to go find him. And he goes, Galactus makes himself easy to be found. And he's like, dude, Thor, I have such bad ennui right now. I am so tired of eating all these freaking people. I'm really sad. Can you help me out, bro?
Aww.
And he's just like, he's a lot more sympathetic. And his origin story is, I don't know, it's kind of bland. He was some scientist, I think, on a planet that had plague, and then the plague came, and then somehow he survived, or it was actually not that well drawn, so I'm not sure if it was him who survived, or like someone else, but he came out and then was perpetually hungry, and then ate the planets. And it didn't explain much, but he was not having a good day, and he asked Thor for help, and then Thor's like, this is a mighty problem, and that's kind of where it went with that. But let me look at the final issue, because I totally forgot the end at this point.
I do like in all of this, it never explains like what exactly it means for him to eat a planet. Like, it says over and over that he eats planets, and it's all well and good, but what, like, all I really see is that he just kind of destroys them. Like, what is he actually eating? The bioforce or whatever? Like, I don't have any concept of that.
I don't know. I think, maybe it's, like, his energy? Or, he zaps them and gets energy? Oh, I just went to the end. Basically, yeah, Galactus tells Thor his story, and he's like, this is why I'm Galactus. Peace out. And he leaves. And Thor's like, that doesn't solve my problem, man. And then Thor is like, whatever, and goes to New York.
And this is the problem doesn't get resolved at all. That's great.
No, but like Galactus, he basically called Thor out and was like, dude, I am really sad, and I'm kind of lonely, and I don't like it. Let me talk to you about my troubles. And then he does, and then he's like, bye now.
So, isn't that kind of what happened in Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, too? That we read? He comes to eat Earth, and she just kind of talks to him, and then he leaves?
Yeah, they just, like, hang out. This seems to be a trend, because that's also what Hercules did. He's like, well, they partied, which was maybe more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
But, yeah, Galactus just needs to be understood.
I think so. That was the whole premise of, like, this little arc. I'm not even exaggerating. He was like, I want you to know me. So, Yeah, this is kind of a funny introduction to Ego, too, because Ego's only in, like, I don't know, a tenth of the comic? Right? Because there's not too much.
Yeah.
David, what did you think about this introduction to Ego?
I thought it was an entertaining comic. I mean, you know, it's definitely like comics from this time period that we've read before. Like we said, it was a lot of stuff packed quickly, like densely into just two issues. And a lot of stuff happened, but I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, because there was a lot of, like, jumping around, and, like, there was those aliens that came out of nowhere, and then they decided they were going to live on Ego.
Yeah, the Wanderers.
It's just, it makes me wonder, like, why did they tell stories in that way? You know, we get this... And like, what was Thor doing there? He didn't really seem to be... have, like, a real clear goal or role in the comic. At least from my perspective.
The lady from Rigel was like, Thor, get over here, right?
Yeah.
Like, wasn't that his
Oh, yeah, that's right. Tananile.
Tananile, yeah.
The Rigelians look really weird in Marvel.
Yes, they do.
But he still didn't even do anything.
They like fired space beams at each other.
Yeah.
Well, the two, you know, Thor and Ego did, but Thor just kind of watched.
Yeah. The most was he built that stand for Mjolnir, which was like, why do you need a stand? What's going on?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But Go.
I found the comic to be... I was entertained by the comic.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a lot different from what we would get nowadays, you know?
Yeah, and I think there is... I think that the haphazardness of what you introduce here is I think the big difference between modern and old comics. Like, modern comics, everything is planned out, like, a year or two in advance in your story, and every little bit means something. And that gives you a nice, rich, thick storyline, and that's great and nice and streamlined, and you can deep dive into that storyline, and that's a great way to tell a comic. But what we lose when we move away from something like this, and Superman was a lot like this too, like every issue of Superman back in the day, he would have a new fucking power, because why not? But in this one, like the Wanderers are here and they're introduced in 160, and then they're settled on Ego in 161, right? And you just kind of throw him in there, and who gives a fuck? And you can come back 5 years later and bring Ego up, and they can still be there, they cannot be there, nobody gives a shit. Like, because there was nobody tracking continuity, because people didn't read the comics that way, you could just throw things around and bring stuff up, and there was nobody, like, filtering through to find this stuff 5 years later and try to tie it back into some overarching whatever. So it does kind of lead to a lot of loose ends. But I feel like it's also more of a breeding ground for creativity, in that you get weird stuff that comes out of nowhere that sticks, because it actually did work and it was kind of cool. Like,
yeah, I don't necessarily think it was like a bad thing. Like, no. You said, it was just a different way to tell a story.
Yeah.
But I think it can be a challenge for readers nowadays to read stuff like this. I mean, remember yes. when we read like some Spider-Man stuff a while ago? I'm talking about like pre-Craven's Hunt. I mean, like old Spider-Man, like when Gwen Stacy dies and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was just so dense, and I think it's not that easy to read, but at the same time, you know, you get more for your single issue. I don't know. I think there's pros and cons for both ways to go. But nowadays, because everything's, like you said, continuity driven, and there's so much planning and stuff, there's these huge events where people cross over, and that kind of thing has to be taken into account. It really changes the reading experience. I think if there's going to be a story with Galactus and Ego, it would not be just two issues. There would be a huge amount of buildup.
Yes.
It would be like a... Because I think we've talked about this before, where it seems like story arcs are often written with trade paperbacks in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they want to make... They want to use, like something divisible by six would be... Or... Yeah. Not divisible by six, but storylines that can be put into six issue chunks. Right?
Yeah. And I think I kind of wonder too, like, how much the audience has changed, because we always kind of comment that the comics reading audience has largely stayed the same as the target market. It's just gotten older. But I can see how, like, this really abrupt kind of, like, piecemeal storyline would appeal to a small child. Because it keeps jumping, but then it actually, like, if you're engaged in it and you care about what happens to Thor, that might actually be good at keeping your interest. I mean, it doesn't work as well when you're an adult and you want some semblance of, like, a clearly flowing plot line, but... Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like this was kind of a major thing for comics of the period, and that, especially just the number of plot lines going on, and that it's not that the stakes are particularly high for individual characters. It's always like Thor has to save the galaxy. Everything's a really big deal, right? So everyone is under permanent threat of death at all times, and the galaxy is going to explode, or something really horrible is going to happen. But it's just, I don't know, kind of like a series of flashing lights, I think, meant to entrance children.
Yeah, and I think you're right, too. There has to be more spectacle, right? Because if you're writing for... Nowadays, some of my favorite issues of comics are when it's the lull between arcs. And it's just my hero that I'm reading the title, hanging out with another hero, and they're just sitting around bullshitting. Like, I think that's part of what makes Matt Fraction's Hawkeye so good, is it's just Hawkeye hanging out and trying to fucking be a person in New York and live in an apartment. And when he has problems hooking up his home theater, he has to call Tony Stark because it's the only friend he knows that has any tech. Like, that's funny and interesting to read because we're adults and that's more relatable to us. But a kid... won't pick that up. A kid will get bored out of his fucking mind. So, yeah. Like, you have to write something exciting, and because you don't know if they're going to pick it up month to month or week to week or however often this was printed, you have to give them a bang for the buck story, like you're saying, but you also have to try to make it as contained as you can. Maybe two issues. Maybe three at the most if you really want to push it. And, like, this storyline... I mean, we read 160 and 161. It doesn't finish in 162. It goes, like, it jumps to 168. You know, like, you get the feeling that this kind of would drop and pick up storylines as they wanted, and it didn't really matter because nobody was reading it this kind of way. But yeah, it has to be exciting, because otherwise, like I want to see that Hawkeye, and I want to see that build up, so that when something big and important happens, I have a contrast in my mind, and I can relate to the fact that this is beyond my scope, and that's what makes this guy a hero. You know, like I get enrichment out of that now that I'm as old as I am. But man, if I were fucking 12, I'd be bored out of my mind reading that, and I would much rather read this Thor.
And I'm looking through it now, and I think one of the weird standout things is, like, so you mentioned Hawkeye, where it's like he's kind of just hanging around, like it's slower paced. Here, at least every single character, I think, who has a name, has something happen to them where you're like, oh no, they're in peril. So, for instance, Tana Nile, they're on her ship, and then a random alien busts through the wall. And he's all mean and attacks them. And, you know, it's about to get her. Thor has to save her. And it's like, oh, she's in danger. At some point, Recorder, they're like, oh, we're just going to murder him in cold blood because he's a machine. And then Thor has to be like, hey, man, he's a person. And then, of course, Thor is always in whatever peril Thor is in. But even, like, like the random aliens, right? Or when Thor and Recorder are going to Ego, they get in this space car that gets blown up. And for yes. some reason, you know, they're both like totally fine in space, luckily, but it's just, bad things keep happening to every single person. And I think it's only like this random old man, Rigelian, who's not even named in this, that doesn't have something scary happen to him. So it's, I think the goal here is to like try to trick you every time to be like, oh no, is this person actually going to die this time? When of course they're not.
Yeah. And it is the stringing you along too. Like I think the perfect example is that alien who crashes into Tananel's ship, right? And then they fight him because they got to fight him. But when they're done fighting him, it turns out he's in peril. His people were the ones that were like, it just rolls from one to the next. It's kind of, it does remind me of those like procedural shows when it's like one clue goes to the next, but oh no, it wasn't that person. Oh, but now this person's in danger. Go save them. But they don't have anything to do with the case. So then you got to go back to the other thing. Yeah. It's just the stringing you along. It is, like you're saying, spectacle. It's just, oh, no, look over here. Oh, no, look over here. No, look over here. But I do appreciate all the little bits that are in here. Like, I am really curious about the art decision to make space the way it looked in this. Not like when they're in spaceships, but like when you see Ego and it's like black and white IRL newspaper clipping kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like, and you know, I think in the second issue, 161, in the front they actually say something like, see more of, what is it? Something about, like, look at this neat art style. Like, I feel like they're actually pointing to it somewhere that I read. And I think it's actually really cool, because it looks like he collaged parts of black and white books together. And that's not something I see too often.
Yeah. I can't recall ever seeing that in like any recent comics. And I thought the art in this comic was, I mean, you know, it's Jack Kirby, but man, does it stand out a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy how something that, like, usually when we read old comics, it's like, oh, well, but like, this is just fantastic.
What I thought was really cool is, okay, you know how old comics, especially when they're redone, I bought mine for Kindle, so it's like super bright. They're really, really colorful, and it seems like, you know, there's not as much consideration for how something looks on the page. It's just like very busy. When something big is happening, like, oh, there's, I think the scene in 161, or no, 160, where it's just Galactus's face over one page, suddenly you get this like much greater conservatism of color, where it's like just the standard pink and orange for Galactus, but then the blue shadow, and it works so well. So it's like, you know, you think, oh, this art's really crazy and busy, but you can actually see all the skill where, you know, decisions were made to make it more or less busy depending on how much attention they wanted to call to something. So, like, there are times when there's a really serious conversation and the background just kind of disappears and it just focuses on the characters in the foreground. Or when they're trying to show, you know, space, like, it's so busy normally. There's all these dots and planets in the background. And I think that's meant to show, like, oh, this is how destructive Galactus has been, blah, blah, blah. And that's not something, like, you kind of think about while reading it, but it's certainly there, and I think it does affect how you read it in the end.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, we talk about color old comics. You can tell because these have been touched up. A lot of the problems with color in old comics is it was hard to print color accurately and print it within the lines that were originally drawn. So I appreciate that somebody went back and redid these, because like the pencil work of some of these artists is phenomenal and still holds up. And the pencil work here is phenomenal and will hold up for a long fucking time, because Jack Kirby was an amazing fucking artist. But if you go buy issue 160 that was sold way back when, it's going to look like ass.
Yeah.
Because printing was ass, and they printed on cheap paper, and they printed as cheaply as they could because they sold it for fucking, was it, 12 cents. They sold it for 12 cents. So make it as cheap as hell. But now when you go back and redo it, not only can you see the line work better, but you can see what they did with the color better because the color is more accurate. Like, you're talking about Galactus and the pink and the blue. A lot of things, like, with color, especially back in the day, you made heroes in primary colors because they were much more easy to reproduce on the page. And you made villains mixtures of those colors, pink, purple, green, so that they're kind of... their image would kind of shift, the shade kind of changes, it kind of visually makes them a little looser, shiftier kind of a thing. But also it shows that they don't operate in clear, defined ways the way that the hero does. And so when you talk about what I appreciate about the page that you brought up about Galactus with the blue shadow is he's talking about the silent desolation that's behind him and what Galactus knows. What Galactus knows he can destroy, only within the vast unknown does danger dwell. Like, he starts talking more like, he talks less like a villain and more like a galactic entity. So the blue shadow, like, color-wise, is also signaling that he's not evil. You know, like, the pink color is a color that is always associated with villains a lot in comics, but the blue shade, I think, like, gives you a visual representation that, no, all bad.
Oh, and that's interesting.
It's something you can only really pick up that it's been redone, because otherwise, it's like, it's just so muddy. But then you turn the page, and it's him with a dumb pose with his giant fork head and weird arm sticking out, you know, like, just the costume is so bad, but...
Yeah, I will say...
Yes, classic, that's one word. I miss the hot pants from Fantastic Four.
Everyone has them in this. Does he?
Oh, yeah, you could still see his thighs.
Yeah, they're there. Everyone is drawn in a different wacky pose, like, every page. And I don't think there's a single spot where the anatomy looks really weird. And I feel like that's actually a vast amount of work to draw and create. And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, man, it's hard to draw hands. Like, you, and feet. Like, you watch a lot of, if you look at a lot of art today, a lot of people cut frames so they don't have to draw hands, so they don't have to draw feet, so they don't have to draw the lower half of the leg. They cut the frame so they don't have to do it. And they'll do it for dramatic effect here and there. But man, Jack Kirby doesn't fucking hide from that. And he'll draw people with, you know, three weird fingers. He'll draw people with duck hands, and somehow it all looks proportional and right, and like, he doesn't shy away from it at all, and he does a fantastic job all throughout. That is a good thing to bring up. I hadn't considered that, but now I'm like flipping through. I'm like, yeah, even the Wanderers look okay, and they're like all fucked up. They're like drumstick thigh legs and everything.
Well, they kind of look like Chewbacca if he was wet.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
I do like
them. Also, can we just say, like, Galactus actually has really excellent emotive facial expressions throughout all of this?
Yes.
Which I find is funny, because he's more emotive in his face than Thor is. Thor just kind of has his Thor frown half the time. But then Galactus is, like, pulling all these crazy faces, and it's delightful.
Oh, yeah, like, right after he gets hit with Mjolnir.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, my limbs have tasted pain. And he's like got this surprised look on his face. It's excellent.
Oh god, this the high language of this.
Because it's Thor.
Yes.
Yeah, but then everyone does it. It's not just Thor. It's like Recorder, Anthen and Nile, and the random Rigelian.
Observation.
What it is that they're all aliens, and Thor has some kind of Asgardian universal translator. So that's what Thor hears.
Hmm. I like it.
Everybody talks like Thor.
Oh, yeah, I just found that panel. My limbs have tasted pain. It's like, oh, it's
fucking great. Doesn't his face look...
It's a great face.
He's so surprised.
That's the face I make when I, like, stub my toe.
See, a couple pages earlier on number 9, on page 9 of issue 161, one of the Wanderers is, like, shouting into a microphone. And it's, like, just a dumb little thing, but it looks... I don't know, it's, like, a good shout. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't like, considered it at all, but, like, yeah, nothing looks weird here, even though it's a bunch of aliens and robots and a planet. Something should look off somewhere, right? But it's all flawless.
Well, it's like, too, the Wanderer, his face is humanoid, but it's not human. And yet the line work gives it this quality of expression where you can actually see how fired up he is. You don't even need to look at the shouting in the word bubbles to know that he's like really, really into the thing he's saying, which that's good art.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the art is extremely consistent.
Yes.
And, I mean, obviously, Jack Kirby has a very distinct style, but he's super consistent. You know, I think that's why, you know, even... It's why everybody's easily identifiable. You know, the poses look normal, because in the context of the book, it is normal because that's how everybody looks. So... You know, maybe that's why. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels weird to gush over the art of a comic from 40 years ago, because most of the time we read them and they're not remastered like this, so you can't really appreciate it a lot of times, but I'm glad somebody took the time to go back and do these.
Yeah, I got it on Comixology, which I think is the same as the Kindle version, and it looks beautiful. You know, I mean, even comics that I have from... like the 80s or the early 90s, depending on what they were printed on, do not look this good. And I think that is great, because I think now people can read these old comics or see them maybe in the way that the original creators intended them to be seen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think, like you said, something is lost in the printing for sure. Especially because they try to turn out, you know, tons of these, and in the 60s and 70s, it, you know, they were trying to, you know, increase their, I mean, everybody's trying to get.
Yeah, I feel like the other thing that happens too is they probably, like you're saying, as the creators intended, I realize there's probably a bunch of this that's in here because you have to have it in because it's ostensibly for kids and you're trying to move the story along and make it exciting. But there's things in here that are just, I think, genuine good ideas that they wish they could have, if they had been writing for a higher, quote unquote, higher medium, they could have conveyed them differently or been taken more seriously, like the idea of a living planet and what does that manifest to be like, and like the way that Jack Kirby chose to convey space with the like collage of black and white book cutouts and the idea of Galactus sure he eats planets, but is that evil? Is that this? Like, there is kernels of really good, like, higher level ideas in here that you wouldn't expect a kid to actually understand. Like, you can tell there's stuff in there that they wish they could have done more. Yeah.
But I think it says something that they didn't just ditch the idea. They actually put it in, even if it was just a little bit. I mean, like you said, the whole idea between these cosmic entities like Galactus, I mean, he's like a force of the universe, right? He can be seen as evil from a certain perspective, but he's like any predator in nature, right? He needs to eat, and he eats other living things, and, you know, he's not doing it out of malice.
Yeah, and he could be either like you can consider him the embodiment of entropy, just the fact that every planet's gonna die eventually, or the randomness of space and fate, like, what's the difference conceptually for us living here on this planet? If Galactus is actually real and comes and eats our planet, it's no different than if we get hit by an asteroid that we didn't see coming. Like, he's the idea that just the randomness of fate in the galaxy can come and fuck anybody.
Yeah.
You know? And it could come for anyone. It could come for fucking Ego. Like, it doesn't matter what planet you're living on. It can come for you. Do we get any idea of what Ego's, like, motives were as a being in this? Or was... like 160 ends, and he's just like, "Yep, Galactus finally came for me."
I think that's. I don't think we did. I think the whole conflict between them is that Ego was like, "I don't want you to eat me, bro."
Yeah. I'm not just like a rock.
Yeah.
There's like millions of rocks out there. You got to come here, huh, bro? All right. Which I guess is why eventually Galactus gets a herald and keeps a herald so he doesn't run into shit like this. I'm sure there's an easier meal out there than Ego. One that doesn't fire back at his little space cube shuttle.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I'm making fun of his ship and the weird, like, gun that he has. But I remember when we read Annihilation, he was, like, building a great machine to, like, there's also a long-standing connection between Galactus and machinery and grand machines and the machinations of how you actually devour a planet. Like, that's long-standing. And, it goes all the way back to here, apparently. Like, I don't know why he has a cube ship that looks fucking stupid while he's wearing his
hot pants. Even in his first appearance in Fantastic Four, he was assembling a machine to, like, extract the planet's energy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't actually going to, like, take a bite out of the planet.
Yeah. And then his downfall was a machine.
Right, it was the ultimate nullifier? Yeah.
Yeah. Cosmic nullifier? Ultimate?
I think it's ultimate nullifier.
Yeah, something it was a nullifier. Nullified things.
I'm pretty confident that it's ultimate nullifier.
Okay. I believe you. Yeah, do you guys have anything else we want to talk about this? We want to rate this?
Let's rate it.
All right, David, you go first.
Oh, man, okay. I'm gonna give this a 3, but the reason I'm giving it a 3 is not because it's bad or because it's particularly good. I think it's just another notch in Jack Kirby and Stan Lee's belt. You know, they made such a huge amount of stuff, mm-hmm. you know, over the years that this is just another great example of it. But it is a good example. I mean, the art's beautiful, and especially in this restored form that we get to see through digital comics and, you know, but I don't think it's anything special. I think you could probably pick up anything from these runs, you know, this run on Thor and be just as impressed or unimpressed if you're like that. So.
All right. Jen?
I'm also going to give it a 3, and I think that David, had a really good point there, like that it's just another notch in the belt for the creators. But, you know, I feel like for these, you have to be in this like really specific mindset to enjoy them. So if you sit down in the same way where you're like, I'm going to watch a really campy B movie and just like it. It's kind of like that. And I feel like talking about these issues made me enjoy them even more, because I read through them and I had a chuckle. I was like, this is written so goofy. And the art is really good. The story is really silly. But I think if you have it in you that day to like just kind of enjoy the genre these comics are in, it's a good read for that kind of thing. It's just kind of mindless fun with, you know, with a few good ideas in there. I definitely, if you have time at some point, recommend reading the bonus issues, because Galactus's origin is really silly and it's absurd. It's just absurd, like the way that plot takes place. And if you go into it knowing that you're like going to be entertained by the absurdity, that's like, it makes reading it so much better. But then Thor's peanut gallery is also featured, so you get like Baldur and Fandral, Volstagg, and then also Hogan is in this one too. And they just like, they're messing around on Earth trying to fill the role of Thor, and they're not very good at it, and it's kind of amusing. So, yeah, I mean, I had a good time reading these, although I would never, I think, just pick them up randomly. I am happy that I did, so 3.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3.5, I'll say. Because it is just them turning out more good work, but it is so good, and it is so much, it's so much better than so much of what was coming out back then, especially Jack Kirby, and like, when we first started doing this podcast, we started with Phoenix. And I think that also kind of spoiled us in old comics, starting with Chris Claremont. Because it's another one, like, man, Chris Claremont did fucking X-Men from 75 to, like, 80-something. Or 91? 1975 to 1991, Chris Claremont was one on Uncanny X-Men. So there were other people out there doing phenomenal work, too. So I'm not going to, like, give it a 5 in the context of their time, because there were other people doing really good work. John Romita Sr. was doing really good art with Spider-Man. Like, they certainly weren't the only ones out there, but yeah, they're turning out. And there's some cool stuff in here, and like we were talking about, you know, oh my god, and Carmine Infantino, yeah. I'm just like looking at a list of old artists. Infantino was fantastic. But mostly I'm going to give it a 3.5, because what I was mentioning and what we kind of brought up before, like, you could have just kind of wanted to be an artist, started doing this, wanting to be a writer, started doing this, and discovered that it was all just for kids, and thrown your hands up in the air and stopped trying, and just made something string along month to month, and who gives a shit. And that's what so much of comics were, I think. But you can tell that these guys not just had fun making this, coming up with weird random shit, but they, like, put genuine effort into it and wanted it to be better and, like, came up with cool ideas and wanted to convey them in a way that was more complex than their audience probably got. So yeah, I mean, like, they were great, they could have just churned it out every month, and for, you know, they did sometimes, but I appreciate that they also tried harder than they needed to and wanted to do better. So I'm gonna give them 3.5. I know I did say that I wanted to bring back the fight night thing to make Jen have to choose between Mogo and Ego. But I couldn't think of a good fight night for this one.
Well, that's okay, because the answer is always Mogo. I mean, that's just a given, so.
I mean, Ego seems cool and all, but it's Mogo. It's Mogo.
Yeah.
That's a little cliche, having a giant face on your planet, you know?
What Mogo, do you mean cliche? He was the first one.
Not cliche, a little bit, I was going to say
egotistical. Mogo's just jealous because he doesn't have a face.
I was going to say it's a little egotistical, but then I remember the name of the fucking planet.
That's like dad joke level 100.
But yeah, it's Mogo. We'll find out next week, though. Next week it might change. We're going to read, what are we going to read? Bringing up the notes. So we're going to continue our Ego series by jumping forward 40 years and read Nova Corps. This was the run done by Dan Abnett with Andy Lanning. And this is volume 4 of the 2007 run. And this is Nova versus Ego. And that's a definite difference in power level than Galactus. So we'll see what happens here. And we'll see what happened to Ego in the 40 years between Thor and Nova. So that's next week. Nova Corps. By Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. After that, we're going to do Astonishing Thor by Robert Rohde, and we got some other stuff coming up after that. But if you want to check out some previous episodes, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, there's a button that says Previous Shows or Past Shows. I don't remember what it says. Past Episodes, that's what it says. There's also one that says Future Episodes. If you click on that, you'll see what we have coming up. If you want to support the show so we can keep doing it, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics, and you'll get access to some bonus content. I'm posting something by the time this comes out, I'll have posted it last week. So there, a nice big bonus episode for you when we talk about mostly Star Wars and action figures, because that's honestly what David and I kind of do a lot of talking about. But there's some other good stuff in there too. Patreon.com/welcometocomics. You become a patron for as little as a penny, you get access to the bonus episode. Yeah, that's it then. Next week, Nova Corps. I'm excited. I haven't read a lot of Nova, so good to go for that.
I'm excited for Nova.
I know you like Nova. All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.